it's like challenging that now and being like, actually, no, I do, I can buy space, I can seek support, help is out there for me. Because I think that's a big thing as well, where social media nowadays will make menopausal women feel like they're powerless, that they're
helpless.
Yeah, helpless. And there is so much you could do to support yourself, to support your goals, to support your relationship with food. You are at the driver's seat when it comes to your behaviors. Even if there's so many things going on, there is so much help out there for you with lifestyle, with nutrition, with your relationship with food, clinical support as well.
Welcome to Cut the Crap with Beth and Matt, the world's number one no bullshit health and fitness podcast.
Are you ready to cut the crap with your diet and exercise, get strong as fuck, and build a healthy relationship with food? Then you've come to the right place.
Let's go. If you'd like to support us in the podcast, join our Patreon, where you get exclusive content, which consists of monthly workouts you can do at home or at the gym, monthly challenges that are either strength, habit, or mindset based, and access to over 100 plus low-calorie, high-protein, family-friendly meals. These are all designed by a professional chef who is certified in nutrition. These recipes are already in MyFitnessPal for easy fucking tracking. New recipes are also added each week.
We believe that fitness is for everyone, so this is our way of getting you started on your health and fitness journey at a price most everyone can afford. So what the fuck are you waiting for? We'll see you in the Patreon. Hi, Annie.
How are you doing?
Hi, Annie. How are you?
Would you like to kind of introduce yourself to our audience so that they can get to know you a little bit?
Sure thing. Yeah. All right. So I'm Annie Ellis. I'm a nutritionist and relationship with food coach specializing in menopause. So I work with women in or approaching menopause or perimenopause to break free from yo-yo dieting and restriction and feel confident in their bodies and around food, without giving up on their fat loss or health goals. And what's interesting is I get a lot of questions about this because I'm not menopausal myself. You know, I get, Annie, you don't look menopausal, what gives? And honestly, good question. Although sometimes I do challenge that back with, well, how do you know I'm not menopausal? There are teenage girls who are postmenopausal. It doesn't have a set age or look. So I always clap back with that a bit. But anyway,
like,
you know,
that. Yeah.
5 years ago, I transitioned out of my role as a scientist. My background is in biochemistry and genetics because I wanted to, I guess, impact people and women more specifically on a much more personal level than I got the opportunity to in that role. And so I got qualified in nutrition, behavior change, mindset, and was mainly working with women in perimenopause who were experiencing changes to their body, not just physically, but psychologically too, and were at a complete loss as to what was going on. And the doctors they spoke to were at a loss as well, right? And I just remember thinking to myself at this time, we have been so let down, like as a collective of women, and not to mention the absolute garbage out there and the misinformation from charlatans capitalizing off these changes that women were experiencing. I just felt like I exited my career, took my passion for like evidence-based, for facts, for accurate information and supporting women, and landed in an area that so badly needed that. And so now I've worked with, in a solely one-to-one capacity, hundreds of women in various stages of menopause with very unique experiences, dieting histories, challenges, etc. And also, like, I freaking know what it's like to feel lost in your body. I know what it's like to feel so desperate for a solution, having been through a really tough battle with endometriosis. No one freaking taught me about that when I was at school. So it's one I'm still going to be struggling with for a very long time. And I feel like I've been taken advantage of by charlatans, by misinformation. So that's like my fuel, basically. That's what I do. And that's why I do it.
Okay. I love the background information there. So I'm curious, because this is something we care greatly about. Why relationship with food and menopause? Like what made you decide to go that route?
There's a lot of evidence to suggest that the menopausal transition is associated with eating and body image disturbances. Menopausal symptoms are associated with disordered eating. So higher frequency and severity of anxiety, depression, sleep concerns, cognitive complaints, pain, and vasomotor symptoms are associated with greater frequency and severity of problematic eating behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
When I say disordered eating, it is a spectrum, but I mean having rigid dietary rules, chronic dieting, inflexibility with your food intake, restricting to control your weight and shape, ignoring or being unable to recognize hunger and fullness, overeating, emotions, those kind of things, right? These are what came up most with the women that I work with. And there are certain life transitions in women's lives, puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause as well, that are particularly conducive to developing and sustaining disordered eating. And I just think the issue is there's so much misinformation out there. Like, I mean, the myths and
it's insane. The stuff,
it's just, it's absolutely wild. Like, where do I even friggin' start? There's a new myth coming in every single second. I feel like carbs are the enemy got kind of boring. I mean, I know it's still
there. I don't hear much anymore.
But now it's like processed foods, inflammatory foods, anything that spikes your insulin. I mean, like, geez, I don't know about you, but diet culture, I feel like it got so sneaky in 2024 and it's disguised better now. It's trendier. It's data driven.
I think the last 2 years, I think we've really seen diet culture get a lot fucking smarter, because it used to be just, you know, hold up a picture of a lean influencer saying carbs are bad and like that went viral, right? But I think, you know, a lot of it is because of platforms like TikTok and Instagram, where people have made a name for themselves, like Beth and myself and a lot of other creators back in 2020 that were calling people out for this shit, and they didn't like it much, so they started getting smarter. They got a lot smarter with their marketing.
It's more like the cortisol cocktails. Like, cortisol is all over the place. And it's
adrenal,
like
adrenal fatigue cocktail.
Yes. I mean, it's like, so they're bringing these like scientific terms, right? And making it sound so scary. And by this is going to help. You're so stressed. And that's why you have belly fat. And it's fucking crazy the amount of videos that I'm sent daily about these. Like, I think yesterday someone sent me one of this girl that was like, the reason that you can't get rid of belly fat is because of your cortisol. I want you to put your finger up to your nose and I want you to breathe really hard, like down, out through your nose. And whatever nostril that you feel the air coming out is like you're parasympathetic. And then the other one was whatever. And then that means you have high cortisol and you're in fight or flight. I'm like, wow, what did I just watch? I mean, is this fucking Star Trek?
It sounds like somebody that's like trying to provide some type of fucking therapy, like over the internet too, when they're doing that. That's insane. That's like therapeutic shit talking about parasympathetic.
But then I went to her but she was talking about that's why you have high cortisol and you are fat loss resistant is what she was saying.
Of course, they always tie it into fat loss.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. Like, she was like, this is the reason you have high cortisol and you can't lose fat now.
Yeah.
And it is freaking wild. And it's like, like you said, it's backed by science now and it's trendy and it's data driven. And also, I think it's disguised through this, it's empowering. It's like, just harness the power of your unique biology. And personally, I don't think there's anything empowering about handing my autonomy over to a glucose monitoring app, right? If we're kind of getting that, you know, basing my food choices off how my blood sugar responds to something I ate on a random day in March, following a set of fasting rules and syncing that to my cycle based off no quality evidence whatsoever. And I think a lot of the non-evidence-based information out there, especially in the menopause arena, is disguised as female empowerment. Like, you know, like, oh my God, wait, you didn't realize you had to change the way you eat, exercise, lose fat, like eat like fast. Well, this is going to change everything for you. But in reality, it's taking you further away from the evidence-based guidelines that we know are actually going to support your body, your goals, and your relationship with food in menopause. It's taking you away from behavior change, from the mindset work, from having trust and confidence in yourself and your food choices, away from rules, restriction, and rigidity. And personally, that's disempowering as fuck. I don't think this is spoken about enough in the menopause space, the detrimental effect this misinformation, these rules, this scaremongering is having on women's relationships with food and their bodies. Yeah. And that brings me to kind of one of like the biggest myths out there that I think is impacting people's relationship with food and also their ability to sustainably lose body fat, is that everything you do has to change now you're in menopause.
Right.
Yeah. It's like you have to be born again, like learn everything all over, learn to walk, learn to talk, everything.
Right. Like the age-old question, I'm in menopause, what do I eat?
Yeah.
what supplement do I take, Beth? I'm like, okay, how about supplement fiber, supplement protein, supplement walking, strength train? And they're like, I don't have to take whatever this and the ashwagandha or like
whatever the fucking thing it is.
Right. And it's like, it's almost too simple. Like, no, but I'm doing all those things, but no, you're probably not. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's no wonder. I mean, like, changes are going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
But the fitness and diet industry have done is twisted that to sell you something you don't need. We need to break down what the actual changes are and how those relate to your eating behaviors, your fat loss goals, your weight gain, your health. And those will be individual to you. And I think that's a big thing as well. It's like you're in menopause now. So it's like women automatically get cornered off into this group of people. And it's like, no, you're still an individual. Like you are still your own unique person. You're just going through this stage in your life. And I mean, like Beth, you're menopause, you're in menopause, right?
I'm 51. I just had a period 6 months ago. So technically I'm still in perimenopause, because I think what people don't understand either is that menopause is having a full year without a period. So you can be in perimenopause for 10, 15 years before you're in menopause. When people are like, I've been in menopause for 10 years. I'm like, no, you haven't. You've been in perimenopause for 10 years. So I don't know, maybe if you could explain to people like the difference, like what happens during menopause? And you were talking about your hunger and satiety and things like that. And what affects that?
Yeah. So menopause is, like you say, it's literally just a day in time, because it's of your menstrual period. So 12 months, if 12 months have elapsed since your last menstrual period, then that day 365, that is menopause for you.
Mm-hmm.
We just use the term menopause to kind of group together this period of life, this transition. So like perimenopause is the lead up to that, when hormones are starting to fluctuate and change. And I think this is a really important point to kind of hammer home, is it's not just this like gradual decline in female reproductive hormones, right? There can be this big ass roller coaster going on. Yeah. And your estrogen levels might be higher than kind of like normal at one point. And so they're going like up and down. I mean, you can't see what my hand is doing on this podcast.
Right.
A big like up and down kind of vibe is going on. That's why perimenopause, like some women might be like, I feel fine. Like I feel great. But 6 months ago, I was in the absolute pits and I just didn't understand what's going on. And then it might be, I don't know, 8 months until they see a specialist doctor. I don't know what it's like over there for you guys, but you know, there's a long waiting list here. And then they're like, I'm kind of fine now. But it's like, but I swear I'm not going crazy. Like I'm not making this up. Like a few months ago, I was experiencing fatigue and depression, and I couldn't sleep, I had insomnia, like all of this is going on. So perimenopause is, it's that transition leading up to that final menstrual period where things are just getting a bit chaotic. And periods can be irregular, but for some people they might not be yet, but you're still experiencing symptoms. So I think that's a thing as well, because people go to the doctor and they're like, I'm experiencing all of these perimenopausal symptoms that I've heard about, and then they're sent away because their menstrual periods are still regular. The two don't have to kind of like coincide. So that's something to be really aware of as well. And then for other people, they might have gone into menopause for surgical reasons, for chemically induced menopause through chemotherapy. I was offered to go into menopause, and that was like a temporary induced menopause to help with endometriosis. So there's loads of like reasons why people might be in this stage of life. And it's not this like quote unquote natural transition. What you mentioned about the hunger and kind of like appetite regulation. Is that So estrogen and progesterone like do have like an impact on hunger and appetite regulating hormones. So what we can see is increased hunger in menopause, which we know is also it can exacerbate overeating, disordered eating, emotional eating, things like that. And so can poor sleep. So when you don't sleep well, like ghrelin goes up, your hunger hormone goes up, the hormones responsible for satiety go down. And so you're not feeling satiated from the food that you're eating, you're hungrier. And so you've got this kind of like double impact going on here, from estrogen declining, but also from poor sleep and sleep disturbances as well, which can create this landscape upon which it's really difficult to be consistent with your eating, be consistent with fat loss, not kind of emotionally or overeat because you've got this big hunger thing. And that's also really, really individual. But, you know, estrogen and progesterone, they also play a role in neurochemistry as well. So it makes you more susceptible to mood fluctuations, feeling irritable, these emotions that we tend to look to soothe or comfort with food. And then we get a real sensory and psychological relief, which can kind of further drive these cravings. And so we have this really vulnerable landscape on top of like, what, 40 plus symptoms that you might be experiencing.
Yeah.
And then combine that vulnerable landscape with misinformation, with harmful advice, with complete removal of foods, restriction, food rules, fear mongering.
Yeah.
It's a real problem.
Yeah.
And I just want to kind of like hammer home to people that it's a willpower problem. You're not broken and you're definitely not alone. There's a lot that can influence your eating behaviors, which we can absolutely support with. But we know what supports with disordered eating, with emotional eating, with overeating and restriction cycles and relationship with food. And that's working towards inclusion, not restriction, practicing unconditional permission to eat, eating regular meals that contain a mixture of macronutrients, like protein, carbs, fats, fiber from fruits and veggies, but you know, carbs as well, that you're managing hunger well, tuning into those hunger and fullness cues, not just ignoring them because MyFitnessPal said that you hit your target for the day, because you have to follow fasting or just eat one meal a day. And so you're ignoring those cues, or indeed because you're stressed, bottom of the pile, but you know, you put your own needs below everyone else's. That might be other reasons why you ignore like hunger and fullness. All of these principles, amongst many others that support a positive relationship with food, are essential to support and sustain fat loss as well. But they kind of go against everything that you're being told by the loud and most widely platformed voices in the menopause space. When you're being told to fast and not eat regularly, when you're being told to ignore your hunger. I remember doing a post, I think it landed in my emails, and it basically said, you've been conditioned to, your body has been conditioned to expect food every few hours. And I was like, what? I'm like, yeah.
You're not a fucking dog or.
Oh, no.
It was
conditioned.
So now you said something a few moments ago, and I really want, I think I want to dive into this because you mentioned unconditioned permission to eat, right? And that's a concept that when we talk about it, it scares the ever living shit out of people, right? We're doing mindful eating right now. We're in week two. So we just talked about this last night. And when when people asked us, like the scenario was Oreos, right? Instead of, they're afraid they're going to eat six Oreos if we just tell them to eat as many as they like. And we're like, yes, eat the six Oreos because you're giving yourself permission. We're going to do that without shame, without guilt. And then you're going to feel and pay attention to what eating six Oreos makes you feel like, what you feel during, after, how satiating it is and things like that. So can we dive into that? Like the whole unconditional permission to eat. What the hell does that mean?
So it literally means that, like giving yourself permission to eat all foods. And you're so right. People think that they're so scared that that is a one-way ticket to overeating. That if they lift the restriction, if they give themselves permission, that they will end up overeating because they always have done, if that makes sense.
Have
done thinking that. The reason you've done that in the past is because you've always restricted it, because you've not given yourself permission to eat it. And so you've been on a diet that told you to cut out carbs, or you went on a sugar detox and said, no, I absolutely can't have this. And that restriction and what that does is create something that we know as the abstinence violation effect, right? And so you tell yourself you can't have something, but all you do is think about that thing, right? It's like that whole thing with the bread button in the corner of the room and someone tells you, don't bloody press that button. And you're like, oh, I didn't even know it was there, but now I know it's there. And now I can't stop thinking about pressing that button because what happens if I press that button? And that is what you do when you start restricting food or having rules around food, or you remove sugar from the house because you believe that you can't have it there because you can't trust yourself. And it's that has fueled that peace that you have, that every time you eat chocolate, you overeat on it, or you can't control yourself around it. Because abstinence violation effect says, okay, you have a minor violation of your rule. Let's say your rule is, I can't have chocolate in the house at the minute, I'm dieting. And so you eventually come across chocolate. Oh, you can't stop thinking about it. So you're like, go on then, I'm just going to have a little bit, right? Minor violation. So you have some, and then that then triggers this all or nothing. Oh my gosh, I've ruined it now. I feel really guilty. Like, what have I done? I may as well just carry on. Screw it, right? And so that is abstinence violation effect.
When the world feels crazy and chaotic, remember that you don't have to. You deserve to take control of your mental and physical health. Cured Nutrition is trying to make it easier for you to do just that. Formulated with their trinity of ingredients, a blend of full spectrum cannabinoids, functional mushrooms, and adaptogens, Serenity Gummies are your answer to finding the calm in every storm. Cured wants you to feel good about feeling good. They took their time formulating their Serenity Gummies. They left out the artificial flavors, sugars, and dyes, and replaced them with ingredients that actually live up to their clean label, wellnessy word. I've recently started taking Serenity Gummies at night for my nighttime routine to help me get settled after a long, stressful day, and they've been really easing me into a great nighttime sleep. Right now, Cured is extending an exclusive offer to you, our listeners. You can grab a bag of Serenity Gummies for 20% off by visiting www.curednutrition.com/CTC and using the coupon code CTC at checkout. That's CuredNutrition.com/CTC and coupon code CTC at checkout to save 20%. Protect your peace and pop a gummy.
That is something that you have that has been caused by restriction. Yep. And so now you have this belief that every time you include that food in your diet, you're going to overeat on it. It's a belief that you have formed from time and time again, restricting or removing that food and then overeating on it. But it was the restriction that caused that, right? Yep. What we need to kind of do is work through that belief and build trust with yourself that you can include this food and not overeat on it. You need to lift that permission because it's removing that permission that made you overeat on it in the first place.
Right.
So that's why we start breaking down this misconception that unconditional permission to eat is going to make you overeat. It's like the restriction and not giving yourself permission is what made you overeat.
It's like, yeah, you're already overeating. So why not try it this way and see what fucking happens?
But yeah, true. Yeah. So true. Yeah, no, I like that. And it's like, do you know what? You might overeat when you first start.
You might. Part of the process.
Yeah. And it's like, again, we have this belief that all overeating is bad and we need to avoid all overeating. And it's like, well, who told you, like, who said that? It's like, you're allowed to overeat. There might be even moments in your life where like, you do overeat, but it's like, when we're practicing this, it's very normal for people to begin by overeating because they've restricted it for so long. And Easter's coming up as well. So that's like, I've said to a lot of my clients this week who were worried about binging this weekend, I want you to include goddamn Easter egg every single day this week, mindfully with a cup of tea and make a really nice moment of it. Just reduce that novelty, lift the rules and give yourself permission. And people just breathe the sigh of relief when you're like, just give yourself permission to eat the chocolate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Beth, so Beth does this every year. What, every October she does
a candy challenge.
The candy challenge with the same premise: eat a piece of Halloween candy every single day for 30 days or whatever, however many days are in October. And what, by the end of like second week, people are like, "Oh, I'm done eating. I'm done with the candy. I don't need it anymore. I'll have it like next year."
And I think there's another misconception around unconditional permission to eat here as well. Is that people think it's just like a free for all? It's like, well, now it's just to eat everything and anything in any amount you want. And unconditional permission to eat, like, it's not about that. When we're practicing unconditional permission to eat, we are still honoring your health. We are still honoring your goals, but you're giving yourself a choice this time, right? And I talk a lot to my clients about choices. It's not, I can't have that. It's not, no, I'm dieting. Like, I'm excluding that at the minute or whatever. It's like, I'm making a choice to not have chocolate today in line with what's important to me and the goals that I'm working towards right now. Mm-hmm. But you know that you can choose at any point to have that chocolate.
Yeah.
You also give yourself permission to do that. And I think that's really important.
Right. It's okay to say no. It's why we're saying no that matters. Right.
And it's okay to say yes.
Exactly.
So how do you build trust in yourself? Is that just allowing anything and everything without eating everything and anything without guilt?
Yeah. Having trust with yourself means literally that, like, having trust with yourself when perhaps you have given trust over to MyFitnessPal. Always been, okay, I stop eating when MyFitnessPal tells me I've hit my calories for the day.
External cue.
Okay.
Exactly. And it's kind of reconnecting with your internal cues. And again, like that choice decision-making, like in that, and being really in tune with what's important to me. What am I working towards right now?
Right.
Being really connected with that and your values and why you're doing what you're doing. Because I'm not saying, again, that tracking is bad. Like, lots of my clients use tracking. But again, I want to give all of our autonomy over to an app. I still want people to tune into, and this is why I give people caloric ranges, right? If they're working on fat loss, and it allows them as well to kind of reconnect with their bodies at the same time. And so this is, like, again, building trust in your body, because I think a lot of the time you've just ignored hunger and you've ignored what your body is telling you, and you maybe don't trust it, especially if you have disordered eating. And so that's like, okay, well, let's say your caloric range, like the upper end of that range is still a deficit for you. And the lower end of the range is just a more severe deficit. Like, it's just a bigger deficit. And so either way, you're still within this big range and you can be wherever you want to be. But maybe on the days where you're noticing in your body, you are a bit hungrier. Maybe you've been partying the day before. Maybe you're training today. And you do eat. It's your body and you notice, do you know what? Yeah, no, I am feeling a bit hungry. So I'm going to honor that hunger and be kind of like more at the top of the range. Also having that flexibility with a calorie target, if you're doing fat loss, is you can go over that at any point.
Yeah.
Not, it's having that balance between honoring your body and your hunger and listening to it, and then not handing all of your trust over to an app. And again, a big part of building trust with yourself is breaking down these beliefs, like practices like unconditional permission to eat, where you're recognizing, do you know what, actually I can include chocolate and then not binge on it. I can have these foods in the house and then not occupy my brain space all of the time and me demolish them all in one go. Yeah. But it's a practice over time, and it's proven to you. I say, when you have this mindful moment with chocolate where we're including it every single day and we're doing at a time when you're not particularly hungry. So don't do this when you're starving. And more likely to overeat. Do this after your breakfast, kind of that mid-morning time. You're not very hungry. Like, have a bit of chocolate with a nice cup of tea. Make it really mindful. Savor it, because I can guarantee you, most of the time when you eat chocolate, you overeat on it because you're mindlessly eating it.
Yeah, you got to date your chocolate.
You're eating it over the kitchen sink. You're not even stopping to savor or taste it. And so you do need more to feel satisfied, because you're not tuning into the flavor and the taste. And that's why we bring mindful eating into this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want you to reflect on and like prove to yourself, well, hey, I did it. Do you know what I mean? Because you've probably got years and years and years and years confirming your own belief that you can't be trusted around food, that you can't be trusted around chocolate. And so we want to break that belief down and provide ourselves with new evidence. And so we have to engage in these practices, give yourself the opportunity to build the down trust, and then reflect on that practice after. Like, how did you feel? Like, did you overeat, or actually did you eat way less than you usually do? In which case, incredible. Flip and celebrate that and start collecting and gathering evidence against that belief that you've always held.
Yeah.
And that's how you build trust in yourself. I love it. And these microtransactions.
This is a process, and it takes time. Like, people can't expect to heal the relationship with food overnight, and you will overeat, and it's going to be scary, it's going to be hard. And mindfulness is huge in this, which people are not mindful when they're eating, like you were talking about, over the sink, over the counter, you're just eating food, and then it's almost like you have food amnesia. Then you look back and you're like, you know what, I don't know why I'm gaining weight. I don't eat that much. It's like, okay, but you forgot the fact that you were over this kitchen sink and having your hand in the bag because you weren't sitting, you weren't mindful. And it's almost like it didn't happen.
And I think to add on to that, I think people need to understand that it's unrealistic to say that you're never going to overeat again. You are going to overeat at some point in your life. Even us health professionals overeat. I mean, fuck, I did it the other night, right, Beth, in Florida. I ate an entire fucking bag of Doritos in
a couple
of hours. I did. I own that. I told Beth, and here's where that unconditional fucking freedom to eat comes into play. I told Beth earlier in the day, I said, I am going to mindlessly eat this bag of chips today.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it. I did it. I gave myself permission. I enjoyed it. I moved the fuck on, and I'm no worse off for it. I'm better off for it because I enjoyed it. And you know, whatever. I'm not guilty. I'm not bad. I feel good. I'm healthy. Oh my God.
I'm not gonna go on a tangent of eating a whole bag of chips every day now.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's like not the episode of overeating that's the issue. It's your response. Right.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's where self-compassion comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this point blank, you are going to overeat again. You are going to emotionally eat again. It is going to, right? Like we have just said, like, I mean, I call myself emotionally eating the other week and I don't think, oh, what am I doing? Like, I'm so bad. I'm a health professional. What on earth do I think I'm doing? Like, that's a cue for me now to lean in, to check in with myself. Okay, what's going on here?
Yeah. You know,
why have I just opened the cupboard door and started eating? For me, it's Terry's Chocolate Orange Elite. I don't know if you guys have that over there, but it is delish. And so I was kind of just picking this out of the cupboard and I wasn't hungry. And that's something to recognize. But a lot of women start working with, I didn't emotionally eat. And then actually we start working on the hunger scale and starting to recognize like how their hunger feels during the day and reconnecting with those. And they'll realize and recognize at that point that they're emotionally eating because they're not hungry. There's something else going on. There's something else driving them to that cupboard at that point. And that's where emotional hunger and physical hunger are different and start to leaning and recognize this. But yeah, back to self-compassion. And when these moments happen, it's so important to offer that compassionate voice. Okay. If your best friend or your kid just came to you and said, I just ate the whole bag of gummies and now I don't really feel that great. What would you say to them? Because it's likely not what you say to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so checking in with that language and that dialogue that happens after that event, because it's that guilt and shame that comes from that then drives the overeating cycle.
Right.
Because you end up thinking, I need to make amends for this. I need to compensate for this. Or you go the opposite way and you think, sod this. I'm useless. I may as well just carry on. And then you binge. And then you start restricting again because you're like, right, I need to get back on it now. Let's go. I need to make this. And so self-compassion is so, so important. But what self-compassion does in these situations is it allows you to get curious. It allows you to actually reflect on the behavior rather than thinking, right, I need to read that. Don't know what happened there. But if we do that, we're not gathering any insight. There's no failure when it comes to your relationship with food. Everything gives us information. It highlights perhaps that we have something going on, that there's a bit of a gap there, that we need to do a little bit of work, that we need to dive in and check in. There might be something going on. It gives us crucial information, which we can absolutely get curious about. And so part of self-compassion is getting curious in a non-judgmental way. It's not just speaking kindly to yourself, allowing yourself to actually reflect on these behaviors, which I think sometimes we are so opposed to doing sometimes.
Yeah.
Looking inward and at ourselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. That's ugly sometimes.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's a really crucial component of your relationship with food. You're going to overeat. And how you respond to that is so, so key.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's like you're going to get triggered at some point. Like we're not trying to say you're never going to be triggered again. We're working on the response and the action after the fact. That's it's all behaviors. It's all cause and reaction and everything like that. I think it's too important too for especially menopausal women, perimenopause and people that have gone full change is like the relationship with food aspect, because these are women that have been, they're not just being targeted now as women going through menopause. These women have been targeted with every fad diet for the past two or three decades too.
Yeah.
So they've been getting misinformation for years and fad diets for years. So it's really even more important now for them to repair that relationship because they have been chronically dieting for years, which has led them to being under-muscled, right? So their body composition isn't where it should be for going through menopause and all these changes that are going through. Their bones are weak, their muscles are weak, they have a lower metabolism, and they're doing all these other things because that's what it's been kind of compounding over these decades. And now that they're gone through menopause, it's like one last big fuck you from the diet industry to them is like, all right, well, we can't fuck with you too much longer that we can think of yet, but here's what we can do now.
Yeah, completely. And I, do you know what I think as well? That carries quite a lot of shame with it.
Yeah.
I speak to a lot of women in their 40s and 50s who feel like they should have had this sorted by now. Mm. Feel like they should have their shit together around food. And menopause in itself, like, is loaded with shame. It's so shameful. Your mothers didn't speak about it, or all of them, most of them didn't. But there's this silence and this stigma and this shame around menopause in itself, but also around eating behaviors and emotional eating and overeating as well. A lot of shame and a lot of this belief that you should have it all figured out by now. And so asking yourself, like, am I open to support with this? Or do I carry this belief that I should have cracked this code by now?
Yeah.
Recognizing, yeah, that you have been subject to diet culture, like, it's being bombarded at you for absolute decades. These mm-hmm. beliefs around food, these behaviors around food have been forming for a hell of a long time. Why mm-hmm. should we have figured it out by now?
Says who?
And it's like, and like you said, Matt, now there is then this whole layer of misinformation and rules loaded on top of you because your body is changing and because diet culture is capitalizing on that, because it has spotted this vulnerable point in a woman's life that here we go, we can make money off this now. And so, yeah, why should you have this sorted out? Why shouldn't you almost be struggling with this? But yeah, asking yourself, like, am I open to support? I think as well, it's easy for people to just, it's easy for you to blame your willpower and try another diet than to get curious about your behaviors and your mindset and your relationship with food and your relationship with body. Mm-hmm. And then reach out for support or accountability with these things, because mm-hmm. that's what you've always done. You've always said, it's my willpower. I'm lazy. I'm useless. I'm just going to go on another diet. That's what you've always, that's really familiar to you. Actually, like, doing this work is scary. Like, mm-hmm. it is completely. But what's scarier, you know, staying exactly where you are in this uh-huh. loop,
yeah,
or actually having the courage is what Brené Brown says, like, courage is fear walking, mm-hmm. right? And so, yeah, like, that's always a question that I ask people, like, am I open to support with this? What's my resistance to kind of getting help with this? What are my beliefs around this? Like, am I feeling quite a lot of shame? Because I think a lot of people do. And I think it's really normal.
Well. Yeah. Asking for help too is hard. It's really hard. And I, all the time, these women, I feel so bad because they are just spinning their wheels and they're just looking and trying. It's like, why don't you, not to toot my own horn or your horn or anything, but hire someone that can help take the guesswork away from you so you're not doing this anymore. Because it's okay to ask for help. Right.
Do
you don't need to do some crazy TikTok trend or Instagram trend again and again and again. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to find a doctor that will actually fucking listen to you. If one is not, go to another one. I know it's easier said than done, but I know for me that you have to search until you find answers. You do not have to suffer.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think the messaging that we've received as women over our lives is, don't make a fuss.
Right, you know, just deal with it. it's part of getting older. No, it doesn't have to be. Miserable.
It's part of being a woman. I mean, I was even told that when I was going through all the changes with my endometriosis, and nobody knew what it was. No doctor knew what was going on. And they were like, oh, why don't we just see how it goes? Like, this happens sometimes. Right? And I'm like, this does not happen. Like, it's like being medically gaslighted, right?
Right.
It's like, I've been bleeding for 6 months. Come on. Like, and so, yeah, this messaging that we've received as well, it's like challenging that now and be like, actually, no, I do mm-hmm. I can occupy space, I can seek support, help is out there for me. Because I think that's a big thing as well, where social media nowadays will make menopausal women feel like they're powerless, that they're
helpless
and there is so much you could do to support yourself, to support your goals, to support your relationship with food, you are at the driver's seat when it comes to your behaviors. Even if there's so many things going on, there is so much help out there for you with lifestyle, with nutrition, with your relationship with food, clinical support as well. There really is. So yeah.
What are some simple things that women can do to support themselves through menopause before, let's say, searching for an HRT or something like that to help? What are some things they can do, like, I guess, exercise-wise and diet-wise that will help minimize symptoms?
So that's kind of like a tricky one because I almost see that as a bit of a dichotomy. I like to kind of separate the two. Like if you need clinical support, then go and seek that because realistically, the scope of nutrition and exercise is not there in comparison to hormone replacement therapy. So if that is accessible for someone, then I will always say, go and seek that. But evidence-based guidelines in terms of what we can support ourselves with now, is again, like what we said before, like it's kind of like the same for everyone else, but it just gets more
important.
Like building meals around protein, aiming for, I don't know, like around 0.7 grams per pound body weight and divide that across 3 to 4 meals, aiming for 30 grams of fiber per day from plant foods, whole grains, veggies, fruits, beans, legumes, being mindful of refined sugar intake, like that can have an impact on symptoms, and ultra processed food consumption. But again, I say being mindful. I don't say cut that shit out. Like don't.
Sometimes people think being mindful means cutting shit out though. So I think that's important that you distinguish that.
Yeah.
And I don't. And after we've spent time talking about unconditional permission to eat, again, that might be something that you want to lean into. If you do feel like you've strayed down the restriction and fear around sugar at the minute, because again, we're looking at an overall dietary pattern. We're not looking at isolated foods or isolated choices when it comes to diet. That is so important to hammer home because I get so many questions like, what should I be eating in menopause? Tell me what to eat for breakfast. And it's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm doing you a disservice. But follow these guidelines and incorporate these and see the bigger picture of your diet as a whole and your exercise as a whole and have a bit more flexibility there. Yeah, I always say being mindful, like I think alcohol, like I just say get rid of that shit. I mean, it's not the same, in my opinion, as food. I don't think there's this unconditional permission to have alcohol. It's like, it is not, there's no benefits to it whatsoever. It's not like food, it's not a necessity. I would say cut that shit, or again, be mindful. Like it's quite an individual discussion. The evidence base we have for following an overall dietary pattern is the Mediterranean style diet. I always say, and the best thing about that is that it encourages inclusion of foods rather than you need to cut this out, you need to cut this out. It's like inclusion and adoption of healthful behaviors. So I would always sway towards that. Again, prioritizing high quality sleep, easier said than done, I know. So how else are you, how are you supporting yourself behaviorally with that, or clinically if you feel like you need that too? Managing stress, developing emotional regulation tools outside of food, combining cardio, strength training, balance, flexibility, increasing your meat, satiating breakfast. Again, that goes against what we're being told to fast, to skip breakfast.
Yeah, skip breakfast. And for sure. It's funny that you talk about here's the guidelines, right? Because that's one thing we hear then too, is when we talk about the guidelines. So a lot of people, and this is always in the diet culture camp, and be like, the guidelines aren't working. The guidelines fail. It's like, nobody's fucking following the guidelines. That's why they're not working, because if they're, nobody's following them. It's like 5% of Americans get enough fiber. That's a, like, that's not just menopausal women. 5% of Americans are getting enough fucking fiber. And that's an atrocity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely that. Literally most people are not following the guides, or they're not following them consistently.
Yeah.
Right. Consistency. Oh man. Yeah.
Betsy.
Open a can of worms there. The consistency. Yeah. Consistency is important because again, people will think I'm doing everything right. I've not changed anything about my eating. And some genuinely hear that, but some of these changes in perimenopause, some of the effects that hunger and sleep can have are very subtle. But the evidence is there. Like we have the research to demonstrate like the behavioral influences that hormones have. Again, it's like fat gain isn't caused by hormones directly. It's caused by the influence of that on your behaviors and your energy balance. Right. That's really important to hammer home.
So can we let's hammer it home then, because this, this is a point that really needs to, like you said, needs to be hammered home. You just said hormones don't directly make you gain fat, right? So, so that's your, it's influencing your behaviors. It's influencing your energy output, energy input, your satiety, right? So really, what is that? What does that mean that hormones don't make you fat?
So, yeah. So essentially menopause is you cannot gain fat without being in a caloric surplus. You cannot gain fat without being in an energy balance. That is what is happening. Mm-hmm. Literally 100% of the time someone is gaining body fat, you're in an energy surplus. And it's no different in menopause, except people will try and convince you otherwise. That's not changed. But what has changed is everything that's going on in your body. So depression, sleep disturbances, anxiety, rage, joint pain, migraines, vertigo, breastfeed. These are just some things from my client's experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes as well, not always, what is happening against a backdrop of other lifestyle factors that we have to consider too. Aging parents, loss, grief, young kids, teen kids, kids leaving home, you're spinning a million plates, you've got your career to uphold. No fasting protocol is going to help you with these. The impact that that is having on your eating behaviors, on your consistency, on your movement, because it's those things that are influencing your weight or your ability to see fat loss progress. And that, like I said, you might be aware of it, or it might have happened quite subtly. But even if we take sleep as an example, so sleep restriction has been associated with increased feelings of hunger, food intake, reward-driven eating, impulsivity,
pretty much any kind of negative health marker.
And
there was a meta-analysis, I think, of 41 randomized control trials looking at sleep restriction. And on average, across these participants, they consumed about 250 calories more per day compared to when they had normal sleep. And that's just on average. And that's just the impact of reduced sleep. Wow. And there's over 40 symptoms related to menopause. And so it's not that your body's broken. It's not that it can't process carbs anymore, and so it lays it down as fat. I'm not even going to tell who said that last week. I went to a platform of like 500,000 people as well. I'm just like, no, this is wild.
Yeah.
Your metabolism hasn't crashed and burned. But this period of time does make it easier to be in that positive energy balance.
Right, right.
Nudge you into that caloric surplus. Or it makes it harder to sustain a consistent calorie deficit over a period of time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But energy balance is the fundamental driver of fat loss and fat gain in menopause. That simply does not change. It does not change.
And when we talk about metabolism crashing, right? Really what crashed is that now you're sedentary. When you were in your 20s and 30s, you were moving 10 to 12,000 steps a day on your feet all day for work. And now your kids are out of the house. You're not chasing kids around. You're not strength training or whatever you weren't doing or you were doing back then, right? Now you're moving 4,000 steps a day instead, more stress. So you're managing your stress with alcohol instead of health promoting coping mechanisms and things like that. It's all these behaviors. It's all these behaviors.
It is. And that's why I say it's so disempowering to be told that it's cortisol, to be told you have to fast. And the reason that you've gained weight is because of carbs. It's like, it detracts us from it removes us from the fundamental solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It clouds our awareness. It doesn't allow us that window of awareness into our behaviors and to actually stop and check in with what's going on.
Yeah.
Has changed in the last few years for me, like what possibly is going on. And it also throws the ball back in your court. I know it sounds all really doom and gloom, like all of this is kind of going on, but it's recognizing that you do have power here. There are things that you can do to support yourself. And I think that's another huge myth, actually, that weight gain is inevitable in menopause.
Right.
There's so much people telling women that they're going to gain weight and there's nothing they can do about it.
Right.
You hear that a lot with medical doctors, unfortunately, when women go to get help with menopause, they're like, oh, it's just, you're fucked. It just happens.
Right.
It happens.
Cheers. Thanks so much. But
yeah.
You know what's ironic? Because what this does is it causes fear of gaining weight. And there was a study in perimenopausal women looking at disordered eating. which we know can lead to weight gain. But a key risk factor for the development of disordered eating amongst these women in perimenopause was fear of weight gain and the body dissatisfaction that can bring. So this fear mongering it's like doing the opposite of what
they spoke it into existence in a way. Like they created that reality because they were so fucking afraid of it. So that then probably might change their behaviors, right?
Right.
Their relationship with food and exercise. They preemptively mentally started restricting, which made them actually restrict, which then made them binge. So yeah, that's wild. That's an interesting study.
Yeah, completely. And so that fear mongering has to stop because again, it's increasing body dissatisfaction. It's increasing fear of weight gain, which we know drives disordered eating and issues with relationship with food, which can lead to weight gain. And it's not helping having that opposite effect. Not to mention as well, like you said, Matt, your expectations can have a really profound impact on your behaviors. Mm-hmm. If we expect to gain weight, if we think there's nothing that we can do about it, that is going to feed into how you show up for yourself,
right?
The actions that you take. So it's really, really important to recognize that it's not inevitable, whilst we also acknowledge the reality of menopause and the struggles that can come with that, not denying that, there are things you can do to support yourself.
Yeah. Focus on what you can control.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And you may need to adjust your expectations of what success looks like to you now. And sometimes I challenge that use of that phrase, you know, successful fat loss is 1 to 2 pounds per week. That's a sustainable rate of fat loss. You aren't necessarily going to see that every week.
Right.
Successful fat loss is what you can be consistent with.
Mm-hmm.
Get your validation, not from the scale, but from your behaviors, from your habits, from how you show up for yourself, how you feel in your body, what you're doing to support your health and your future you. Because ultimately, those are what drive the downward trend that you're after anyway, if you're pursuing fat loss.
I love what you just said there. Get your validation from your behaviors and not the scale. That's such a fucking great way of looking at it and thinking about it.
Absolutely.
If you're using just the scale as like a way for you to feel good and be successful, like that's validating potentially bad behaviors. If the person had to restrict to get to that scale, and like the old, like we know this from like people that went to Weight Watchers, right? They would binge heavily after a weigh-in, the weigh-in day, and then the 3 or 4 days leading up to it, they would starve themselves just for that validation on the scale that day, a weigh-in, a check-in.
Yeah,
exactly that. And exactly that. It's like, what do you want? What are you seeking here? Is it long-term sustainable fat loss that improved your health, that improved your life? Like, are you looking for behaviors that add to your life, or are you just looking to manipulate that scale weight?
Right.
Yes.
And it's so important. But yeah, you're right. Like I have a lot of women that have come from Weight Watchers that have come from Slimming World. So when they went to Slimming World, I was speaking to my mum about this the other day because she's still in that world, right? And it's like, she was saying to me, she's done with that. So I'm celebrating her on this podcast right now. She's finally done with it.
Mom.
Yeah, right?
But she was saying, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of going there. And they are just applauding the people that have lost weight on the scale. And it's almost passive aggressive towards the people that haven't.
Mm-hmm. They just get shunned. Like they don't even like they,
that is
we're
horrible.
Just not even going to address you. Like get over there.
And we internalize that. And we've had years of exposure to that behavior that forms these beliefs within ourselves. So I'm not blaming you for having your self-worth and getting your validation from the scale completely. Right. It's recognizing like how that's holding you back right now and where that's kind of keeping you stuck. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely wild to me because again, it's that ignorance of what actually got you there in the first place. It's the ignoring those things. And my mom was saying, I've been exercising every single day this week. That's incredible for my mom. And now I've just been reduced and ignored. And I've done all these incredible things for the last 4 years, not getting acknowledged. And then that can creep into our own internal belief system. Even if we've left Slimming World and Weight Watchers, then we are pursuing a more sustainable goal and more sustainable trajectory with that creeps in. So there's work to be done. It shows up then as this internalized way that we behave and treat ourselves when it comes to the scale, when it comes to our journey, because of how Slimming World treated us.
Right. Well said. Wow. Well said.
Such amazing information during this podcast.
I love it.
This has been so incredible.
We've talked menopause before, but we haven't done the deep dive into
relationship with food during this time.
Yeah.
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 You're a wealth of knowledge, Annie.
I do my best. But I feel like we've only scratched the surface as well. Like relationship with food, we haven't even touched on body image much, really.
Right.
A little bit about body dissatisfaction. But yeah, like there is a whole breadth of relationship with food and body image concerns and things to kind of talk about there that we have literally just scratched the surface on.
Wow. Maybe we could do a part two with you.
I would love that.
For sure.
We'd love to have a part two talking about that, the body image aspect as well.
Yeah, I think that would actually be great to kind of marry those two things.
Yeah.
I think they're so intertwined as well.
Yeah.
Relationship with your body, that is like, you cannot have one without that. Because again, like we know that disordered eating, we know that your relationship with food and your food choices are driven by this preoccupation with your weight and your shape and dissatisfaction with those things. And so we need to work on one in order to kind of work on the other.
Yeah.
So it all kind of comes around and marries together really nicely. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does. So Annie, if you said if you scratch the surface, and we did just scratch the surface. Now, if people are scratching the surface and they're like, I want to scratch a little bit further, how can they find you online and learn a little bit more and see what you're up to?
Yeah. So I'm Annie Ellis one more time, because if your brain fog is anything like mine is at the minute, but you can find me on Instagram and TikTok, but I'm more active on Instagram at A Ellis Nutrition. I'm sure you guys will put the link in your show.
Yeah.
But as well, I was just going to say that if you want to understand more about what's holding you back, more about your relationship with food, and get more kind of clarity on where to kind of go with your journey, that doesn't mean you're constantly wading through misinformation and overwhelm and complicated rules that leave you feeling guilty. Like, I've also got a free clarity quiz that you can take. So if you DM me the word quiz on Instagram, then I'll drop you a link to that as well, because that takes you to some really great free resources on relationship with food and food guilt, and just more specifically what might
love
be going
on.
There we go.
That's me.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Annie. It's been great.
It's been awesome talking to you. Well, we will chat further about a part two.
I think so. Sounds good.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. So why not share with a friend who needs to hear it? Send us a DM on Instagram or email us at cutthecrappod@gmail.com and join our Patreon at patreon.com/cutthecrappodcast. As always, we appreciate you and thanks for being here.